It's the Neverwinter Nights Podcast.
The Neverwinter Nights Podcast.
The only podcast for the Neverwinter Nights game series, bringing you news, interviews, reviews, and more for the community by the community. You can find us online at neverwinternightspodcast.com. And now, on to the show.
Hey, this is Aaron, a.k.a. DM Silver Adept of the Realms of Trinity and the Neverwinter Nights Podcast.
Hey, I'm Yasin Jowney, a.k.a. Phalanx. I'm the lead administrator and mapper for Tales of Omnis.
Hi, I'm Neil Simpson. I'm known as Amethyst on the forums and in-game, and I'm an admin of Tales of Am.
Hey, this is Brian, a.k.a. Sir Brian of the Realms of Trinity and the Neverwinter Nights Podcast. And you're listening to the 172nd episode of the Neverwinter Nights Podcast, a podcast all about the Neverwinter Nights series of role-playing games and the upcoming MMO by Cryptic, Neverwinter. We have an excellent interview with guys from Tales of Am from the Neverwinter Nights 2 Persistent World, and they're going to be on with us shortly. Our new segment's going to be covering our beta VIP test that we run through that we had with the Cryptic guys yesterday. They had an event to take through press people and people in the gaming community that write the blogs and all kind of different stuff through Neverwinter beta, and showing the different features and taking us on a run through an area called the Cloak Tower. And so we got to do all that yesterday, and we're gonna just spend a little bit of time now to talk about it. We'll be posting some videos later on YouTube, and I'll have links to them in the show notes once I get them up there and edited and whatnot. So, Ben and I and Kama, one of our podcast contributors and Realms of Trinity 3D modeler, came on with us to do the walkthrough as well and the tour as well. So, we were on yesterday for about three, four hours, going through different stuff and, doing the QA session with Neverwinter developers. So, first things first, Ben, what was your first impressions of Neverwinter beta?
Well, overall, and I'm just going to pick the game apart from start to finish. To start with, in terms of game mechanics, it's going to take a little bit of getting used to for most people, I think. I mean, there's the usual WASD spacebar control system. But some of the other things like your inventory, switching various viewpoints, things of that nature, is going to be a little bit different for people. Which, it's not necessarily a bad thing, and to be blunt, if you don't like it, you can always switch them, so nothing's set in stone. No, but the visuals are quite good. I would say that it may be a little bit clean-looking for now, but again, this is beta. They may be adding some of those specific, I'm trying to think how best to fit, non-value-added features of, this is just stuff that people would notice while wandering around, or this is something that if you're staring at the dirt for God knows why, you'll notice. But I would say overall, if you take it for what it is, which is an MMO set in Neverwinter, set to the Dungeons & Dragons mindset, it's definitely something that's worth a look. How detailed they get, how much custom content we can make is where I feel it's going to make its bones with the Neverwinter Nights community, is if people can still make custom content. I see there being a lot of interest. If people are going to have to do something else, I can see it being a little bit different depending on what goes on.
Yeah. Yeah, the Foundry content, we really weren't able to, at least for beta, it wasn't available for us to sniff through. I've been looking at it on Alpha and, putting a list of things together for Andy Velasquez, which is the lead producer, Neverwinter, and I passed it on to him, and he was very receptive to the ideas that I had, put forth, just trying to capture some of the features that, I really think that set apart the Neverwinter Nights 2 toolset from anything else, like the terrain editing and stuff like that, and a couple other features that I put forward, that being able to do certain things that, would really help custom content creators, basically story writers and everything. So there's definitely stuff that, I seen looking at the alpha version of the tool set that I seen that was definitely needing. But there are other things that I really feel that they knocked it out of the park. you know, the conversation ending, all that stuff. I mean, with all the conditionals, the way you built quests and journals is very similar to Neverwinter Nights 2 and 1 for that matter. They're very similar processes. One other thing that I thought that was an outstanding feature was the NPC creation or your mob creation utility. It's very similar to the one in Neverwinter Nights 2 and Neverwinter Nights 1 tool set, but the ease of using it is much better, and it doesn't crash when you go to the appearance wizard like it does on Neverwinter Nights 2. It actually works all the time. So there's a lot of stuff like that, plus there's a lot of features that it has that the Neverwinter Nights 1 and 2 tool sets don't have. So there's a lot of stuff that can really help you tailor out your NPCs and your dialogues and things like that. As far as terrain editing, you know, there's zero capabilities with terrain editing right now. Tile set, they have tons of different tiles and different stuff like that, so you can build your zones for interiors. Exteriors are a little bit different. They're like preset empty areas or populated areas, depending on what it is, but there's no terrain editing at all, or, you know, building your streets the way you want them or stuff like that. It's all prefabbed right now, but those features are definitely working on, and, you know, hopefully we'll have them by time of release. So as far as the Foundry is concerned, you know, definitely there's a lot of potential there. And, you know, if you're a Neverwinter Nights 1 or 2 modder, you know, I definitely think once they get all the features in place that they want to get in place, it'll be huge. Yeah, to build content there. I mean, you'll be able to, totally.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Just interject to the DM who did my tour was actually one of the guys who's working on the Foundry, and he did mention that they definitely want to keep the modding community alive and well, and they definitely realize that that's where the majority of their lifeblood's going to come from. So to those who are definitely looking at it, in regards to modding, I would definitely say you can err to the side of caution that things are going to be happy as opposed to, gee, I'm not going to like this.
Yeah, definitely. They're very committed in getting everything in place that you as a content or modder, developer would want it to be. So looking at the big picture, yeah, definitely that stuff is really good. Something to double back on what Ben was talking about, the user interface, as far as combat is concerned and stuff like that, is very streamlined. It's very good that way for that purpose. I mean, it's more of an action game than straight out RP or strategic. It's a little less like you're going in there and you're busting skulls. I mean, that's what they want, you know, and I see that. No matter what class you are. So that's one cool thing about it. The one negative I would say about the user interface, it's very clunky. Now, especially if you're trying to get into chat or sending tells to people, you know, maybe just because we're just not used to it, but it wasn't very intuitive at all to get a list of players on the server and to be able to, you know, find people or whatever. And it was a little bit frustrating, you know, to getting around those features, especially when we're trying to communicate with the DMs that we're on and with each other, you know, until we found each other, it was a little bit frustrating. But I think that's something that they're definitely looking at and improving upon different modes of
control.
I think one thing for sure, if they give a cursory mode where your mouse works like point and click, like it does in Neverwinter Nights 1 and 2, I think that would be huge. Seriously, be fat, because then you'd have all kind of stuff there that, you know, that it would make it a lot easier hitting your hot bars and your chat window and all that good stuff. But there's a ton of features. I mean, as far as the interface is concerned, there's tons of options. And I was going through them and my head was spinning with all the different things you could turn on and off or switch around or move. I mean, it definitely is much more streamlined than Neverwinter Nights 2 was. And it too was good. I love the Neverwinter Nights 2 interface, but, you know, definitely, it's got a lot of potential. As far as party play is concerned, yeah, we had no problem at all getting in the party and, you know, going around
right.
And stuff.
And the party chat capability was very nice as well. I mean, granted, there are times that, you know, something would happen, but, you know, to be fair, they're in beta.
Yeah.
You know, it's not going to be something that you just snap your fingers and life gets better, but. The thing is, though, is there was a lot of good things about the way they're setting it up to sort of make it so, gee, I don't have to run Skype and this and that. Or alternately, what might be nice in the world of RP is it could switch to the point where you can actually RP by talking to each other, yep, as opposed to RPing by needing to do all this crazy typing or typing paragraphs and emoticons and all those sort of things. Instead, you can use your own voice if people want.
Correct. Yeah, that's all built into the game, you know, so you don't have to have Skype up or some other, you know, utility that's currently being used in the Neverwinter Nights 1 and 2 community. Something else that stood out to me is something extremely cool. There's actually two things that stood out to me as being extremely cool ideas. The first one was the audit the trail. They have this little glittery trail that you can see, you know, that lead, like say you're on a quest and you started a quest, it'll actually lead you to the NPC or where you need to go to start, because the place is pretty immense. Neverwinter City is extremely immense, and a lot of other places are too. And if you get lost or whatever, it'll actually let you, you know, pick up your trail where you left off. So there's that. That was one thing that was really cool. And that's a toggleable feature. You don't have to use it, but it's a feature that you certainly can leverage if you don't like you having to explore around or getting lost in big zones.
The other thing is, though, is that's nice is that can also be toggled off if you do not enjoy having somebody tell you how to do everything.
Right. That is something that you can do there. And the area instancing system, it was something that stood out to me also is, you know, very good because, you know, fresh runs. I mean, it's something that we did on Realms of Trinity about 6 months ago. Now we built an area instancing system for our stuff, too. And I noticed that it's a big improvement over just the standard, you know, respawn timing type thing. It gives you a fresh run. You can get in there, get your stuff done. You know it's always going to be there. You're not waiting around. So it's that part is really cool about that and the way that they set up everything with that in mind. And as well, there's waypoints along the run that if you were to die, you can go back, you know, take your penalty of whatever and then go back to if you made it so far through the dungeon or whatever you're running through, whether it's, you know, cave or whatever, you know, you can go back to that waypoint that you achieved, so you don't have to do the entire run over again if you don't want to. So that part was pretty cool. Otherwise, the death respawn system is very similar in Neverwinter Nights 2 stock respawn system.
Right. The other thing, too, is I asked this after our party wiped. You are going to be able to do things like, you know, use res rods and all of those sort of things. So it is not going to be a case of, you know, oh, my options are either go back to a save point or to XYZ. You're actually going to be able to still have the tools and the skills, so you are going to be sort of well off.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's a lot of the stuff, you know, we just scratched the surface with our VIP session. And, you know, I think that, you know, it's open for us until, I believe, Saturday. So we're going to keep poking around. Ben's going to be getting in there and Kama, they're going to be sniffing around as we currently checking it as we record. You know, so we're going to give more updates as time goes on. Plus, we have some big fat interviews coming up here, hopefully soon with Jack Emmert, the CEO. The CEO of Cryptic. And the executive producer, Craig. So we're going to definitely, you know, try to get them on the show and, you know, have them talk about the process of how they've been putting everything together and, you know, and just talking to them about, you know, what we think of so far and taking their take on it from Neverwinter Nights 2 and Neverwinter Nights 1 people. Because obviously there's a lot of learnings we could pass on, and, you know, they're obviously big-time game professionals, so they know what they're talking about, too. But, you know, we also have the niche covered, you know, what people are looking for from a Neverwinter 1 and 2 perspective. So, you know, we're trying to cover all the bases. And, you know, obviously, if you're listening to this and you want to, you know, chip in some questions that you'd like us to ask or things that you're concerned about, you know, feel free to hit our Facebook page and, you know, drop us a line, you know.
Yeah, definitely let us know.
Yeah. Because, you know, we know from our perspective as persistent world runners and, you know, developers, but from a player perspective specifically and, you know, solely and looking at it from maybe a RP server perspective, which, you know, we're going to talk to Telzam about, you know, since they're a role play specific server, we'd like to put everything together and give that as a package for them to digest and to help direct their development efforts. If, you know, if that's where they want to go.
Right.
We're a helper role.
Yeah.
That's all. We have no official capacity.
Yeah. The one thing I would like to add, too, is our guide showed us the mounts that you'll be able to get. And I will freely admit that was one of the most awesome things that I saw, was the fact that you can, in fact, have a creature that's just gigantic in size that, you know, you can ride on. And it's not like the Warcrafty one where it's some cheap gimmick. It's, you know, the guy mentioned this is not going to be something that's, you know, set up in a way that, you know, gee, we want you guys to get suckered into doing all this crazy stuff to get this. It was more of a, this is something we think you guys will really enjoy.
The mounts are definitely a big thing on there. I mean, their appearance was awesome. And, you know, it's going to be a big part of, you know, what the MMO has to offer, really. I mean, it's just to show you what they can put together. So
definitely.
Well, I think that covers it pretty much. Got the guys here chomping at the bit to get on the show, so let's get the interview started.
Agreed.
All right. Well, hey, thanks Yasin and Neil for coming on the Neverwinter Nights podcast and talking about your awesome persistent world, Tales of Am for Neverwinter Nights 2. Glad to have you. And first of all, why don't you start and tell the audience a little bit about yourself and what you do for Tales of Am, and how you got started in Neverwinter Nights 2, period.
Okay. My name is Yasin Jowney. I'm 20. I study electrical engineering in Canada. And I haven't been in Neverwinter Nights for too long. I've been on a few servers, but it's really gotten more interesting since I've started developing for Tales of Am. And I've had a few names. The one most people know me as now is Phalanx, so that's my main handle. And I'll pass it over to Neil.
Yeah, I'm known as Neil Simpson. I'm Amethyst on the forums. I've been playing Neverwinter Nights 2 since about 2007 online. Never had a chance to play the first game because I was at university and, you know, trouble with the internet and stuff. But yeah, I've played on a few different persistent worlds since 2007. I worked as a builder on Skullport, if anyone remembers that. It was like active around 2007 to 2010.
Yes, I totally do. That's a very cool server.
Yeah, it went, it obviously closed down and that, but since then I played on different servers, then, you know, got together with some friends and decided to make Tales of Am.
Very nice. So, very nice.
Yeah, it's going quite well at the minute, I think.
I'll say. Yep.
Okay, so tell us what got you started in developing the Tales of Am.
Well, I think the main thing that got us thinking about making our own server, it was we'd all considered it for quite a while, had the idea, but we never gave it any, you know, serious thought. But after playing on a few worlds together here and there, we decided that, you know, the way some of the servers were run didn't match the ideas that we had. You know, we wanted to branch off and put our ideas, what we think would make a good server, into practice.
Makes sense. What about you?
Pretty much what Neil said on the spot. Yeah, I don't... My thoughts exactly, really. I mean, we played on other servers. We've had some fun times on other servers, but we always had these little nitpicks, these criticisms, these things that, you know, we wanted to try things our way for once, so we thought we'd give it a shot.
Well, yeah, I'd have to. I mean, that's definitely really cool that you've done that, because, I mean, yeah, when you go around different things, I mean, you're basically playing a lot of times another person or a group of people's vision of, you know, how something is done. When you go out there with that fresh perspective, plus your own personal thoughts and experiences and what makes a good experience for you, you could take that plus the good stuff that you may have seen or felt that you, you know, playing on other things, to put it all together and get something even better.
Yeah, I think one of the main things that stands out about Tales of Am, like one of our main priorities, was the idea to have it like very open, all the development and things. So, you know, everything that we do, development, we try to, you know, keep open with the community, broadcast all our plan changes, different, you know, we like the players to get involved and know exactly what we're doing. So we've tried to push that. How could I put it? There's other servers that have sometimes been a bit, they keep the
behind the doors.
From, It's behind the doors, but they also, if other players express opinions that might get a bit heated, they would, you know, cover them up. I mean, we don't want people blatantly insulting each other on the forums, but we think a bit of heated debate here and there, it actually can be a constructive thing.
Yeah, we are a lot more... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, I'll just say absolutely, you're absolutely right. That's all I was going to say.
Yeah, it's like Neil mentioned, we have this thing we wrote up. It's one of the founding principles that we had on Tales of Omnin. It's called the Odor Policy. And basically, the decisions that affect the users most, administrative decisions, whatever happens, we're always discussing it in the open wherever possible and taking the user opinion on it. I mean, it doesn't matter even if it's a positive thing, if we're planning some great changes or some negative things. I mean, lately we had to let go of some staff members and we've made our reasoning clear. We have this open door policy. It's important, I think, to foster that trust between the community and the staff so there's no disconnect. Like, we're not a foreign entity. We're just part of the community as well.
Yeah, it's definitely the best way to do it. I mean, you know, from our experience as well, anytime you want to make a change or you're looking for opinions, I mean, you want to take it to the community, the players that are actually playing your product. You know, if you could sit there and think, hey, you know, I'm just going to do this because I think this is the right thing to do. But if you're not including the player base and, you know, at least putting it out there for maybe some generalized discussion about it, you know, I don't see why you wouldn't do that.
Yeah, it's not just our administration that tries to keep open as well. We like players to be open with themselves. And because if you have players, you know, critiquing each other or discussing things on a level, it's... We found that on some other servers, if players aren't allowed to criticize other players about things, it tends to, in the short run, it keeps things clean, but it tends to build up a lot of sort of animosity against other, you know, the other players. In the long run, they start to get angry with each other if nothing is expressed. Whereas if people are allowed to critique each other in the first place, sure, it's going to get a bit heated, but at least in the long run, they know where they stand.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I mean, that's a great model to have, where you can have that kind of dialogue open between the players themselves as well. I mean, well, I think the last thing you want to do, and I mean, you see your player base size already is pretty damn impressive, and you know, well, last thing you want to do is have a scenario where things degrade because of people not being able to, you know, constructively have the dialogue they need to continue to have a decent environment to play in.
Yeah, so that's one of the main principles. I think one of the other ones that we try to do is keep lore-wise on the server everything consistent. So we wanted to have everything planned out from the beginning the best we could, so you don't have discrepancies here and there, like, you know, one DM might be doing one thing, yet another one conflicts with it in some way. We wanted to have everything laid out so there's no trouble there, because it's like inconsistencies with the lore and the setting has often caused issues on other servers we found.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, you got somebody on staff that's blowing out all kind of stuff for people, or yeah, I mean, that's just even that way. And then you find out another player finds out that they're getting all these beefy rewards, and then they're getting like piddly stuff. And I mean, they're going to be like, hey, you know, or, you know, unfair treatment.
Yeah, that was, again, that's one thing we set up as well. If a DM's doing events, we have like a standardized table that DMs can look up, and they know exactly what to reward people with, XP-wise, gold-wise, or even item-wise, according to like the length of the event, whatever it was, if it was heavily RP-focused or roleplay, that is. So everything's sort of standardized to make sure that each player gets an equal chance.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah,
because the bias thing is brought up, you know, elsewhere. It causes a lot of problems. We wanted to avoid that as much as possible.
Well, can you tell us the background story of Tales of Amma? Like, do you have like a campaign planned out, like the actual story itself programmed, or do you pretty much do
it on the fly? We have a little bit written out. Okay, the setting, it's in the year 1373, a great year to have a persistent world setting. Why? Because it's right for the spell plague, but at the same time, it's close enough that the timeline in front of us can be entirely custom without breaking 3.5 edition lore in a sort of way. So we chose that year, and of course, hence the name, it's an Omn. It's centered around the city of Coin Athatla, and that's really, we have a lot of regions. We extend far south of Om towards the Snakewood, and we have the Cloud Geeks, and we're going to start building towards Smallteeth soon. But all the stories that take place in Om, I want it all to come back with Catla. The political intrigue that drives everything is all centered. It all goes back to the city. I mean, we might have lumberjacks versus some elves trying to stop them from cutting down all the trees in Snakewood. That all goes back to that lumbering company based in Athcatla. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm, definitely.
So we have that. And we have a main plot planned out, actually. I don't want to spoil anything, but the beta is acting as a prelude to the server, sort of. So that's kind of the idea that I'm doing with the central plot for the beta, at least. And then it's going to start getting a little more exciting.
Very cool.
Definitely. With the way you've set up to be, how would you classify the type of world? Would you say it's a persistent RP world, action-adventure? And what type of magic type would you classify? High, medium, low?
Well, in terms of the roleplay or action category, we'd definitely class it as roleplay. And we would aim for quite heavy roleplay, but not to the extent to which you see some other worlds where there's a lot of applications and stuff like that. We've tried to avoid that. We go for less applications, but we strategically have placed a few things as application wise which would cause problems, such as warlocks often cause problems. You've got certain races who are not fit for the setting, which we've even removed, and there's others that would be considered very unlikely to be in the setting where we'd have to have an application to pick them. But we would categorize it strongly in the role playing field. As for the magic level, it's
medium.
So I would say medium, but it's sometimes hard. It depends what you define the scale as. I mean, you can pick up an absolute maximum of +5 things. A lot of servers go for +4, but we went for +5 because you have a lot of casters who can, say, put +5 on armor or weapons, and we thought if there's a possibility for non-casters to at least make up to that point, it evens things out a bit. But yeah, you won't find anything more than +5 on the server, and the +5 stuff is like extremely rare.
I think
rare.
Some stuff is +4. I'm not quite sure. If we had Myrmidon, we could get into the mechanics more. He's our lead scripter. He couldn't be with us. He's he's an Australian time zone. So
ooh. Yeah, we had a DM the same way. Yeah,
yeah. Know, it was so rough.
Now that it's 4 a.m., please tell us about your server.
Yeah. But if he was here, he could tell you a lot more about the balance choices and the mechanics, because he's really into the mechanics and stuff of Neverwinter Nights. And you know, we need him as the technical expertise. He's
well,
the scripter.
Sure. I mean, when you say like +4, +5, to me, I mean, for me, that seems like a pretty medium level maximum. I mean, considering that, you know.
No, it's not high. Yeah.
No, heck no. I mean, it's good. I think it's a really good place to be because, you know, you don't back yourself in the corner where you got a bunch of people power, you know, gaming with +7, 10 armor, whatever, weapons and stuff. I mean, that starts getting out of hand after +5. You know, like you know what I'm talking about. You've played enough Neverwinter Nights to know.
Casters with low base stat and then just pumping and getting all their spells with an item.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. So you got to take those types of precautions especially when you're building a role play based world. I mean, because otherwise that's all you're going to see. You're going to see a bunch of munchkins running around, you know, glass cannon and everything. What were some of the challenges you faced developing Tales of Am? I mean, just generally speaking across the board, you know, as you're developing, what made, you know, you said this is a pain in my rear end or whatever.
I think each of us would have a different version of what we'd each consider challenges. I think
the first one we had was actually getting the physical server put together, largely solved by Neil, but we didn't have a server machine when we first started early development, and Neil was trying to get one together, and we were taking donations from people who were supporting our development.
Yeah, so we built up the machine, and from there it was easy to start going through all the testing and stuff, because at least we had a live thing. The actual Tales of Am module, it was actually put together to quite a large degree before we even had a machine. So getting that to begin doing testing on was great. I mean, personally for me, some of the challenges have been different time zones, because I realize a lot of the Neverwinter Nights 2 player base is in American time zones, whereas all the developers, I'm in the UK, so it's like GMT Zero.
Canada now, but
you've been elsewhere as well, and Dubai, we've got someone in Australia, so it's all over the place a bit, really. But we seem to be doing all right.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things about the time zones is that, you know, when you are broken out like that, you do got some strategic advantages though too.
Yeah.
I mean, because you figure you can definitely take advantage of, you know, the late nights or early mornings, whatever, depending on where you're at. A lot of times the Australian time zone's really good for that. We had a DM that was in Australia that really helped out our early crowd. So they was able to be on a lot in the morning, you know, where you'd all be at work.
Yeah. Well, there's benefits and negatives to it at the same time. I mean, some of the benefits of us being in different time zones is that if there's players that have a problem, or the server has a problem that actually requires one of the three admins, we're spread out across the time zones, so someone can always ask for help no matter what time it is.
Yep. Definitely.
Yeah, we almost have an admin on maybe around the clock. I mean, it really works out that way because we're so spaced out. You know, we've got Europe, the US, and Australia.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we almost have an admin on at all times of the day, almost, maybe.
Yeah, it sounds like one of those job interviews where you have to state a negative, then turn it into a positive. But that's what the positive is.
I like it. That's good. Good analogy. Yeah, I mean, that's definitely one of the things. We've interviewed a lot of different Neverwinter 2 persistent worlds over, you know, the course of us having the podcast, and that is a common theme. And even us ourselves, I mean, that is a common theme with DMs spread out over time zones. So, I mean, it's definitely not something specific to you.
I mean, some of the other challenges we've had is probably, like, some of us sometimes have time constraints where we're busy or something like that, and we've got other things to do. So it's, you know, it's not a job, but I'm sure that's the same with every server.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, a lot of times, I got a rotating staff. I mean, you'll probably end up having to do the same thing because, you know, I'll have like 10 DMs on, but really like only 4 are active at any given time because, you know, stuff comes up. They got family things, have kids. So there's all kind of stuff that comes up, you know, with staff members, and you know, you got to take care of that business. So
yeah, there's other things you could consider as a challenge as well. I mean, you've got the Neverwinter Nights 2 player base, which hasn't been as healthy as it maybe has been recently.
GameSpy went down, yeah.
Yeah.
But of course, then we've got different companies starting to release the game again because Atari's lost the rights to it, haven't they?
Yeah, they did. And when we interviewed Fergus Uthgaard and Josh Sawyer from Obsidian just a couple episodes ago, they had told us that they were, you know, working out some stuff in that arena. And I think that may be one of the reasons why GOG was able to pick it up and start selling it.
Yeah.
So
it's a good thing in the right direction. Hopefully.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Steam could pick it up again.
Well, I
have to wait and see.
I could say this for sure. I mean, we keep statistics, you know, the dashboard of our activity. And I will say this, and I'm sure you probably see the same thing. You know, I'm seeing maybe a doubling of our activity over the last couple of weeks alone. To me, that's got to be somewhat attributable to the, you know, new players in the player base overall. That's what I think. I mean, it's hard to say for sure, but, you know, looking at the total number of people on Neverwinter Nights 2, period. If you look at that new website, that NWN list, .com, you'll see they have brilliantly done, by the way, but at the very top, you'll see
great website, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, oh, absolutely, and at the very top, they have a total of Neverwinter Nights 2 players, Neverwinter Nights 1 players, and that number seems to be, you know, pretty steadily ticking up, higher than I've ever seen it since I started looking at it.
Yeah, it's good news. I mean, yeah, definitely.
You know, it's funny. We were talking about how the release of the enhanced edition of Baldur's Gate 2, Shadow of Omn, was timely, was being released in a timely fashion, like a very good time. In parallel with our server, so people will play, we'll come back to revisit the Shadows of Omn setting, and then they'll go, oh, we feel like role playing here now, and they go to
hey, that's great.
The funny thing is, they've only done the first Baldur's Gate so far, though, that's actually in Baldur's Gate, so we'll have to wait for the second game to come out.
It's planned, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anytime you can take advantage of something like that, you got to jump on that. You know. Yes. Yeah. Because people will be searching. Heck, you know, even people will be searching for those keywords in Google or wherever, and they're going to get your site. You know. I mean, it's just, that's going to be a lot of it.
More coincidental than planned, but it works out in our favor.
Oh, heck yeah. Coincidental, planned, whatever. It's a benefit, right?
Yeah. Any results are good results.
Exactly.
I've just thought of another challenge we had as well, because we haven't really had any major setbacks or catastrophes, but there was one thing where the server machine kept turning off, and I investigated that for a bit, and I actually discovered... posted a picture on it on the our actual forums, where I was searching around the house trying to find out what the problem was as to why electric was going off in the internet, and I discovered that because of the cold weather, it was actually freezing behind the washing machine, which is in a basement type thing.
Oh.
And the water in the back of the washing machine was freezing in the pipe, so it was spraying water out the back, which... hit the plug, and then it was tripping all the electric.
Oh, God.
But it took a while to work that out, because the server's actually at my parents' house, because they have a much better connection.
Yeah.
I'm just picturing that message.
Yeah.
Our washer exploded, so we have no server.
It was pretty funny at the time, because I had to post a picture of it, and of course it was a piece of paper covering the leak to begin with. But
Neil's ingenious solution.
Hey, did it work? Yep.
Yeah.
It's pretty genius if it worked.
So that's about it for the challenges, I think.
There's the picture, I think.
Oh, man.
Nice. I think
that's
we need to post that, Brian.
Yeah, we will. That's
that is all. That's all that's keeping Tales of Omnia alive right now.
Yeah, I'm saving that. That's going in the... That's going to be on the show.
Your fate is dependent on that blue piece of paper.
Yep, that's going in. That's going... Yep, that's it. It's in the books, as we say.
So, can you tell us about some of the custom things in your server that you'd like to point out or highlight, or you think makes you guys have something that nobody else has?
Oh, I wish Myrmidon was here. He'd like to brag about... Oh, man. Okay, covering for Myrmidon, because I work closely with a lot of the same stuff. He really developed a lot of content. I remember in the beginning when we were just kind of looking around the NW vault for scripts and stuff, and I'd point, oh, this one looks cool, that one looks cool, you know, I'm not really a proficient coder, I see something that looks cool, I suggest it to him. That's how I operate, and he kept telling me that he didn't want to work off a lot of the scripts that already existed. He wanted to make his own framework. He wanted to make everything from scratch so it's flexible when he developed. And he's a really good scripter. I mean, he fixed the uncanny dodge bug. The uncanny dodge works on our server. And the practiced spellcaster bug is also fixed. You can't abuse that anymore. So he's done some really cool stuff. And of course, Kadrin offered his pack to us, and we've been planning all these changes. We have an entire forum, and it's part of our open development policy that I told you earlier about. We had an entire forum and a thread for every single base class and prestige class, and people were just posting their suggestions, and we wanted to kind of just tweak the metagame of the building style of classes a little bit to fit the persistent world niche. So we have a lot of different balance changes. There's a few larger ones. There's a lot of smaller ones. Some of them were for roleplay sense. Some of them were things like Scout, which probably is a vastly superior version of Rogue. That's all it is, with no down disadvantages.
Yep.
So we changed some of that, for example. We gave maybe dexterity-based fighters a little boost, because Swashbuckler has a new feat. It's kind of like the Champion of the Wild PRC, where it gives you dex to damage, but it's not quite as insane. Just
nice.
A lot of changes like that. And we have them all listed there, and Myrmidon's been starting to put in some of those. And we have a random loot generation system. We have, persistent banking. We have just a lot of different... We've been making a lot of the core functionality instead of a lot of the more peripheral things like crafting. We're still starting to piece together.
I think to summarize it up, basically, we've done everything from the bottom up.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to do it. That's exactly what you... I that's what we did. Scratch up.
Yeah, we also find that the server runs very well as well because of that. So we know everything that we've done ourselves, and we know if something wrong happens, you know where to look. So the servers run really smooth so far, touch wood.
Yeah, well, with you doing that level of work, you know, where you're taking it upon yourself to, you know, start from scratch, getting everything down exactly the way you want it to be. That's going to be I don't see any reason for that to change. I mean, unless you put some kind of monstrosity in there. But you'll catch it, like you said. You'll catch it right away because you did it, you know.
Well, Myrmidon mostly.
Well, Myrmidon, but you know what I mean. I say you as a group, you know, team effort.
Fair enough. Yeah.
Well, continuing on, your persistent world, I mean, from what like I said, I've checked it out. I've looked on the forums and stuff and your website and everything. It looks extremely well done and very professional. You know, what was the players' reactions in response to your, you know, playing your PW? Is it what you expect?
It was pretty good, actually. We had a bit of popularity before we even started beta, because we've been kind of passing word around that we're developing a server, we're making all these changes we wanted, and we've been telling, you know, our friends, and they told their friends, and we started beta with a reasonable, like, maybe 30 players. Everyone, this was on the first launch back in November, and we had very little functionality and a lot of bugs. And despite all that, we still got a lot of good reception. You know, the areas are well done. The ideas are great. You know, I like how you're documenting everything. And then came the criticisms and the bug reports, because that's how it works. You meet a benchmark and then the bar is set higher and users expect you to follow.
Right.
It's an uphill battle, but, you know, we've been developing a lot of content. We have one of the larger player bases right now in Neverwinter Nights 2, I think. We hit maybe 50, 60 people during peak hours.
Yeah, that's awesome, dude.
Yeah, I think one of the things that helps out with player reactions in them having a good response is that as staff, we're quite close to the player base. We hang out with them in Skype chats and things like that quite often. So I think a lot of the players see us as often like friends or someone to talk to rather than just someone at the top who's at some, you know, like maybe unapproachable or something. They actually know us on a personal level. They know what our personality is. So I think that helps a lot as well.
Yeah, like, not a closed circle of elites that just, you know, role play with each other with our staff characters and stuff. I mean, like we have a lot of friends, just random players here and there, people we meet. Some of us choose to play anonymously, some don't. We're very integrated into the community. There isn't much of a disconnect, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's definitely a good thing to hear too, because, you know, even when there's times that, you know, as you guys were saying, if somebody wants to be anonymous or what have you, just to have it set up in a way that people feel comfortable, hey, I can go ask a DM anything if I have a question. You know, I mean, stuff like that and some of the little things you guys mentioned, I mean, to be honest, that's what keeps people coming back.
Yeah, we like everyone to be approachable, like, if we're approachable as staff, it rubs off on the players, who are more comfortable with each other, they're more comfortable with the server, and it just seems to integrate a lot better.
Right.
But in relating to that, actually, with I think one of the things that helps out, at first we thought it might have made things a bit too complicated or bureaucratic or something, but we've split the staff into different sections. Like, we have law assistants who specialize in looking at the law, finding any discrepancies, things like that. We've got actual moderators who deal with mechanical problems, player issues, things like that, reports. And we've got, like, the actual DMs, which we see more as storytellers. So you don't have DMs that are dealing with everything. They can focus on storytelling while the mods deal with the mechanical issues. It spreads the workload around a lot better, I think.
Yeah, definitely. I like the model, totally.
Yeah. So while you guys have been running the Tales of Om, what would you say are some of the most enjoyable moments or the best feelings of accomplishments you've gotten?
I think I think it was enjoyable making the server to begin with and getting it launched in the first place. That was a enjoyable, you could say, a milestone. But other things that we've enjoyed as well, I think we were quite surprised as to how many players we got in such a short space of time. I think that's been pretty good.
Tough question. I don't know. There's a lot of things I enjoyed about developing Om, and a lot of milestones we've hit. One of them is probably when the first time we ever actually hosted the module and it was there was not there were no scripts, there were no dungeons. I mean, there were a few scripts, just basic spawning and stuff like that, but it was basically just a vast, poorly walk-meshed wasteland. I mean, it was built. It was a lot of it was mainly built, but even then, people were just running around. Like, we had a few beta testers running around for hours just exploring and taking bug reports and commenting on how great this area is or how they want this change. I don't know. It filled me with a sense of endearment to the project almost. Right. You know, you're very humble when you get that very first reception.
I think one of the things that's, I mean, it stands out is that, you know, you put all that time into it, and then when you see the reception it's getting, it especially right off the bat, you know, you're not like scrabbling for players. I mean, you got a nice beefy base of players there, and I think that's a sense of accomplishment for sure.
Yeah, I think one of the other things personally that I've enjoyed quite a lot is the way we run things on the server. We try to keep rules to a minimum, such as the PV player versus player rules, are actually very basic, and we've had very little complaints.
We're trying to build more of we cover the necessary situations. We have some obvious rules. We're not going to exaggerate and say we don't have rules, but our rules are a lot more lenient to kind of encourage the player cooperation aspect in role play instead of policing everything. Because eventually, the more limitations you put on players, you'll end up working like the DRM for Ubisoft works, where you're punishing legitimate customers while the pirates are just getting the game cracked unimpeded. You know what I mean?
Right. Right.
That's an analogy I like making, right?
Yep. That's definitely a good analogy and a model to you know, run your server by. I totally agree with that.
So yeah, we'd rather reward, you know, you attract more bees with honey. That kind of thing applies. We'd like to reward better. I mean, we're not afraid to call someone out if they're being absolutely inappropriate. We even have a sub forum in the staff forums for lore inappropriate characters that the DM might notice. He can bring it up to the attention of the staff. You know, this is usually reserved for something absolutely absurd.
if we see
a drow cleric of Lethandar or something ridiculous like that, we have to step in. You know, it breaks the immersion. It's inconsiderate to the other players. They're expecting us to keep this world believable. And
definitely. Yeah. You could, when you spend all that time and you're working on that stuff, and then here you see He-Man running around, or, you know, Conan the Barbarian or something, you know. I mean, it's kind of, you know, it gets a little out of the realm of immersive. At that point, no question. Just asking this one. This is a question for you. You know, we ask a lot of people, but I'd like to get your take on it too. Where do you see the NWN2 community going in the upcoming days? And also, what is your thoughts on the new Neverwinter MMO by Cryptic?
All right, the Neverwinter, you know what? Here's the thing about the Neverwinter Nights community. A lot of people say it's faltering. A lot of people say it's a bit weakening. But I've modded for other communities before. I've been part of the role-playing scene in other communities. And I can tell you that there aren't many games that fit the specific niche that Neverwinter Nights fits right now. There aren't many at all. There aren't many multiplayer Dungeons and Dragons based games where people can host. There's not a lot. I mean, I think there's a few. There might have been, but they're all dead. I think Dungeon Siege had kind of something like that back in the day. I can't remember. But I mean, it's a very specific niche that Neverwinter Nights is filling right now. I feel that unless something similar comes out in the future, that the core, you'll lose a few people, you'll gain a few people, but the core, the fans are going to be there because there's nowhere else for them to go, really.
Uh-huh.
It is a very specific niche. There's nothing to replace it as yet, is and says. But regarding the new Neverwinter game, I mean, the way I describe that, I'm not sure if you're allowed to use any expletive language in this interview or not, but...
Well, you surely can, you know. It may not make the final cut.
I mean, with the game that they're developing, I mean, everyone knows what they're doing. It might work for them. It from what all appearances, it looks more like an action game that's trying to replicate other massive multiplayer online games that are out there at the moment. I'd been a bit general now. I think there's a lot of companies who are trying to copy the World of Warcraft template, and they want to make all the money. They're aiming high to make a lot of money, but they're not really going to succeed because there's that many games. It's like the death metal scene became in the 90s. It became saturated with so many products that are the same, sort of died out, or, you know, all the lessers weren't picked up because they're just all the same. I think they would have been better off actually catering to the actual role-playing community, even if it would have meant making less money or something, or potentially making less money, they would have been more successful. But it's not released yet, so we can't say what's going to happen too soon.
Okay, yeah. Well, I don't hate MMOs in general. I really don't. And I mean, as from a business perspective, I could see where they're going with Neverwinter. It's a good idea. It's going to have some degree. I don't think it's going to flop entirely. I think it might have a little success. It's not going to be a huge hit, but it has a free-to-play subscription model, so it's clear that they're not aiming for that. I mean, if you look at a recent example, Star Wars: The Old Republic, they had a subscription-based model and they had a huge budget, like massive. I think it was something like $200 million. And that's why the dependence on success isn't as great on Neverwinter, I feel. I think they're expecting that they won't be massively World of Warcraft kind of popular. So I don't think they're trying to imitate them. Now, my problems with the actual game, I'm going to play it probably. I mean, it's free and I love the setting. So I'm going to try it anyway, but at the same time, the gameplay changes, a lot of them sort of mimic the criticisms that Dungeons & Dragons fans have towards 4th edition. You know, it's kind of ironic how similar the complaints are. I mean, you have Neverwinter, they're moving towards a very streamlined UI and interface and gameplay to suit more gamers, to suit the casual type of gamers, that kind of thing, to be more accommodating, right? But at the same time, they're going to lose the heart of the hardcore fans who want all the intricate details and the mechanics. I mean, did you see their hotbar system? They have, like, I think 3 keys or something like that.
Well,
you can have active at a time. I'm not sure.
Well, we just played on it yesterday for the VIP thing. We were on there for about 3 hours yesterday playing beta. Yeah, so I know exactly what you're talking about. I played it.
It does seem very, very, very watered down for the general populace. You know, you might get more people playing it, but you're not going to get rigid a fan base. You're not.
I we're going to talk about it in our news segment that we record later, but our coverage of it. But I know one thing's for certain, that not having the level of customization that you do with Neverwinter Nights 1 and 2, you know, there's going to be some, you know, some gnashing of teeth, I think, here and there. But we'll see, right? You know.
Well, I noticed from the structuring of the question where you ask where the Neverwinter Nights 2 community is going, and then you mentioned the new MMO, that you're kind of trying to draw the link there. Am I right? Like, is the Neverwinter 2 Nights community going to be affected by the release of Neverwinter?
That's not really what... No, I was at... There are two separate questions, but, you know, obviously I don't think that the Neverwinter Nights 2 community is going to disband because of Neverwinter. I certainly don't think that.
Yeah.
But I do think that the players that are currently playing Neverwinter Nights 2 because of, you know, that don't want to role play, they're just hack and slashers, they might hit the road, because a lot of players that we've seen personally hit the road for Diablo 3, you know, which was a total joke of a game, you know. In my opinion, I played it as a joke, and, you know,
I wasn't a fan either.
I think we've got, like, various role playing servers in the community, and every now and again you always get these, you could put in quotation marks, scares, where a new game comes out that's supposed to affect the player base. We've had the Star Wars game, we've had Diablo, there's been Skyrim, there's all sorts of things, but at the end of the day, after a couple of weeks, everyone tends to come back again. It's like a temporary thing. I don't think the game's going to hit the player base in any meaningful, long-lasting way.
I don't think... Here's the thing. It depends on your server, your setting. You're more a role-play server.
Yeah.
I mean, you're role-play. That's the way you developed it. You're going to continue to have a very steady and continuous, you know, stream of players that are going to be hanging out there and playing and enjoying it. Whereas we're a hybrid RP action, you know, we've taken a lot of hits from these new games, and it's disrupted the player base. Yeah, we've come back, but it's just, how many of these hits can you take? You know, it's like, you know, after a while, it's like you're scrabbling. So it depends on your server. You know, I know other action servers or more action servers have been affected more negatively by these changes.
I think
it's true. It's different demographics, I guess.
Yep.
I admit my opinion's going to be jaded because I only really pay attention to the role-playing scene, but I can understand what you're saying, because when you look through when GameSpy was actually still active and you browse through the categories, it was always the role-playing section that was overwhelmingly more filled with players than the others.
Right, exactly.
I think the role-playing section is, you know, that there's nothing else, is there really? So they just stick with Neverwinter Nights 2.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
That's why when you look at the, like I said, it's two separate questions. I mean, you got the Cryptic/Neverwinter project, and I see a lot of opportunities in that environment, but not as many as after we had beta tested. You know, I don't see as many opportunities unless there's some major changes to the way they do it. So
I'm waiting to learn more about the Foundry. I mean, that could be kind of an interesting idea, but I mean, considering it's an MMO, I don't think they're going to give people free rein with that, which is a little disappointing, but we'll see how it goes, I guess.
Yeah, we'll see.
And I personally agree with you guys in the regard that it's really going to come down to what level of customization is available to the users. One of the things they did was they sort of got into these tours. And one of the things mine mentioned was, you know, with the user customization capabilities, you could foreseeably do nothing but play user content and you'd still get your levels. You'd still all those good things. But at the end of the day, as you guys said, I think the big spot where it's going to come is if we can all make our own content and people can RP in our own content, even if we have to lose the DM aspect, but instead it's just roving developers who interact and play and act like themselves, I can see the community shift. But to your guys' point, depending on what is made available to everybody, you know, if it turns into something where you don't have that capability, I think that's where we're going to see the split, where the action people are going to go into Neverwinter, but the RPers are going to stay into the Neverwinter Nights series.
Yeah, it depends.
It depends. It's like I said, if something new comes out that can fill the same niche that Neverwinter Nights and Neverwinter Nights 2 currently fill to a good standard, people will ship there. I mean, we could ship there. Who knows what the future holds? If it's a good platform for that kind of gaming and role-playing, then people are going to follow suit.
I think the future, a lot of people talk about role-playing things as though it's going to die out, or these type of games that we play like Neverwinter Nights, but with the sort of appearance of these, what do you call them, where people pay money towards making a game rather than get publishers to pay for it. What's the site called again? Yeah, Kickstarter. Yeah, we've seen a lot of those cropping up. So I think, you know, that's going to help out a lot in the future. Like, people who really want to make a specialized game that's not going to cater to all the console people and stuff like that. People are going to be able to make games. As long as there's people there to support them, they'll be able to back it up with the money, even if it doesn't make business sense from a publisher's point of view.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I agree totally.
Yeah, and that's the one thing, being a hardcore computer gamer myself, is it's one thing that always makes me cringe is the second I hear, oh, and we're making this for the console as well.
Yeah.
Because nine times...
You know, they're sacrificing some.
Yeah. It's like, oh, well, you can only use three buttons that make no sense on a keyboard, but it's perfect on an Xbox controller.
Yep.
Not a lot of games have done the transition, right, I think. Few have.
Yeah.
Yeah, some do.
Well, thanks for coming on the show. I mean, I really appreciate, you know, you taking time out of your busy schedule to come on the show and talk about Tales of Am. I mean, it's very awesome, persistent world, and I really wish you guys the best of luck and continued support, and if anything we can do for you to get your, you know, updates out there for you on a podcast or come back on for another interview to talk about some other stuff, you're more welcome to come back.
Right on.
Yeah, thanks. You're welcome. It goes the same way as well. If you've got any, you know, if you want to interview us or ask us any questions in the future, feel free. But thanks for having us.
If you want us to interview you for Tales of Am, let us know.
Hey, that's fine. Whatever you want to do. Just let us know.
I was going to say, it might be a slightly different hour.
Yeah. Oh, crap. That's good. Well, I'm going to give you the closing line.
Get in game and level up.
You can always reach us via our website at neverwinternightspodcast.com or by email at show at NeverWinterNightsPodcast.com. The opinions and viewpoints expressed on the Neverwinter Nights podcast are not necessarily those of its sponsors or those of Obsidian, BioWare, Atari, their partners, or employees.
The Neverwinter Nights podcast is a production of the Realms of Trinity, who are solely responsible for its contents.
The Neverwinter Nights podcast is copyright 2012.